The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
This sermon is a bit of a circle back to a sermon that I preached about a year and a month ago. On that Sunday in early November, I was, like many of you, devastated. Surprised would be to put it lightly. Disappointed, too, would be light. Angry, mortified. I felt betrayed by those I thought I was aligned with in the biggest sense of what we agreed was sacred in our shared, sometimes deeply tragic experiment of a republic. Inside, I got ugly and vengeful. It's safe to say I was not what we would call ministerial. And I got stuck there for longer than I expected to. One day, a member of this church, whose email asking for us to act with more curiosity and compassion went unanswered by me for too long. And on her way to church, she talked to a stranger about what was going on here with her minister. And the woman observed in response, "Sounds like your minister is suffering." It's a good thing the woman who shared this, the member who shared this, waited to be last in line that Sunday because she barely had the words out of her mouth, and I was crying, sobbing. I was suffering. So many of us were, though I hadn't put that word to it, but it fit. Most of us, I think, have compassion as a goal for how we want to be in the world. I know, I think, for most of us, we have this sense, if we've been in this journey of making meaning of this life or trying, that part of the ultimate goal is to gather up as much wisdom as we can find in our lives and cultivate deeper and deeper compassion so that we walk through the world bringing with us that wisdom and compassion, holding everybody we meet as we wish to be held. After the election, that part of me, the part that knows that this is the life worth living, wise and time-honored, that part that wanted to be compassionate, it got stuck in a closet for a little while. I don't think we can get to compassion by force or willpower. Kristen Neff, who got her PhD at UC Berkeley and is now a professor of education psychology at UT Austin and a deep student of compassion, she says it doesn't start, she agrees, with offering it to others. She says in her studies, compassion isn't something that goes out until it comes in. And unless it does, and this isn't just New Age, solipsistic navel-gazing, but a truth-tested and also an ancient one. I think most of us have reflected by now on the fact that Jesus's command to love your neighbor as yourself is only a blessing if we've learned how to love ourselves with gentleness and generosity and reverence. And the Buddha famously instructed, hold yourself as a mother holds a beloved child. Compassion begins with ourselves, where it cannot be authentic. I don't think we're all raised to be self-compassionate. I don't know about all of you, I would love to know, but I was raised to be kind, but also strong. To breathe through fear and worry, how to get knocked down and brush myself off and get back up again in sports, in school, at work. The instinct was to quickly review what went wrong and build a better way forward and head back out into the world. Compassion for myself was not absent, but I'm not sure it was front and center. And I get it for sure, part of growing up and raising people to go out into the world is learning as we grow to put pain and loss and setback in perspective in our lives, to learn how not to get mired in it, certainly not to be destroyed by it. And I think that there can be a subtle assumption or maybe fear that were we really to pay attention to our pain, give it space and care, that we might lie down and give up, or just whine. Is that true? And is that true? Or is it in fact truer that compassion is what gives us real resilience, you and me? Kristen Neff, gotta quote the experts, she says the latter. Self-esteem, she says, that's the fair-weather friend we have to beware of. That's the one that depends on social approval or looking attractive or succeeding rather than failing. Self-compassion, though, it's this perfect alternative to self-esteem. All you need, all we need to have self-compassion is to be a flawed human being, like everyone else. It's a constant source of support and refuge to acknowledge that. We offer it to ourselves, she says, not to feel better, but because we feel bad. To me, all of that sounds an awful lot like what love looks like. And it has all kinds of ripple effects when we're able to get ourselves there. She says we're able to bounce back more quickly when there's compassion in our relationship to ourselves. We are actually more willing to stand up for ourselves and delineate healthy boundaries and expectations when we practice self-compassion. And not because we think we're special and above or better than everybody else, but because compassion speaks to this deep love that's there simply because we are human and deserving of deep love. What comes in too goes out. When we love ourselves well, we can offer that love to others. Not because we've deemed them worthy, but because they're human. And we don't want them to suffer more than necessary either. Neff argues that compassion is our right. Just by virtue of being human and precious, like air and food and safety and love. It's lovely when compassion shows up. Think about some time in your own life when it showed up for you. Think about how powerful it feels to be met in a moment of suffering with real compassion. How different it makes the moment that someone sees us, doesn't want us to suffer, and is willing to lean into the moment with us to alleviate what they can. I have a recent example. It's actually not extremely dramatic, but it was strangely powerful. It was May of this year. I was on vacation with my family, actually a vacation we planned after the December vacation ended up with our daughter being twice in a hospital, both times precariously in a dangerous place, so not a vacation at all. And this was the balm for us that we planned in the fallout of that time. In this May vacation, we were somewhere beautiful and easy with beaches. And in this particular moment, we were snaking our way through old coral and between larger rocks from a beach out to a place where we could snorkel. And people were coming and going between this narrow pass. It's low tide, and you can't really see or know what you're stepping on. And I lose my footing, and I pitch forward, and I slam my second toe into something very hard, and immediately I feel only searing pain. People are waiting, and my husband asks if I'm okay, and I respond not graciously, something angry and dismissive of him and myself. Well, it's not broken, if that's what you mean. It turns out, actually, the toe would turn bright purple. It matched my violet-colored nail polish. It was stunning. And it turns out I did have a hairline fracture, not that you're not allowed to suffer without bright colors and x-rays to prove the injuries. But in that moment, ashamed about delaying others, trying to muscle through again and deny my pain, this head pops around my husband's from behind. This incredibly sweet face, hearing my angry dismissal of my own pain and hearing an anger that makes most people want to cringe and look the other way until it passes. This face looks me in my eyes and says, in the most compassionate voice possible, in the midst of the sea and the sand and the movement through coral, this person says, yes, but it hurts a lot, doesn't it? I could have kissed her. And time strangely stopped for a moment. Something about the willingness of this person to reach across the divide of my anger and our being strangers and risk offering compassion, saying without using these words, but in what she said and how she said it, that I didn't need to be ashamed for being human and hurting. It stuck with me. And it shifted something a bit. Holding ourselves with tenderness and compassion, I think, allows wisdom of a particular kind to bubble up that not showing compassion thwarts. In the compassion I've been working to offer myself, part of that wisdom for me of late has been realizing part of what I lost or let go of last November 5th. It included some of the love for and connections I had always felt to my fellow Americans and that I mourned not feeling. People who previously I felt were my people in all our differences, bound like one human family in common destiny for better and for worse, for the long haul. I have also been feeling cut off and mourned who I want to be and believe myself to be. The way I've been feeling those ugly feelings does not echo the lives and teachers I revere and want to emulate in my life. And though we don't choose to be compassionate for strategic reasons, I will also say that this division I have been participating in appears that it's getting us nowhere fast. And doing that faster than many of us could have believed possible. I want to say in all of this, to be clear, that in this talk of compassion, I'm not surrendering my sense of who we need to be, of who we need to protect, of who deserves care and dignity and respect, not to make peace. I'm not forgetting other efforts for change that we are rightly engaged in. Recently, I have been on a campaign to call leaders, thought leaders, activists, people I know who have windows into some piece of our nation and some piece of what strategies that we need to be worried about, ready to act on, what levers for change we might push, people who study democracy professionally, people in denominational leadership, activists who protect LGBTQ folks, even people in the military, constitutional law professors. These are some of the ways that I am channeling the real panic that I feel, that many of us feel, that I felt particularly recently 2 weeks ago when there was legislation in front of Congress that would have allowed the State Department to take away the passports of people who spoke out against the government. Which includes most of us. And for very good, patriotic reasons, you and I continue to speak out and hold our nation accountable and speak our truths in honest, morally clear language. There's lots of great advice about what we do in the world, that doubling down on local connections that I talked to you about and interfaith connections. Remembering that our house of worship has to be a place where we can come for refuge and renewal, spiritually resourced and talking together about what we need, what each of you needs in order to feel that right now. So doubling down on mission here, John Buren's reminded me rightly of that. And in all these conversations, one person I talked to pulled me back to the piece of the conversation that I have been circling around. That's this piece about compassion. I'd like to end here. One of the people I called was the Reverend Marlon Lavenhar. He's the senior minister of All Souls Unitarian Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, our largest Unitarian Universalist church. Marlon has done incredible ministry in his 20-plus years with the Tulsa church. Much has been done around retelling the racial history of that part of the world, working for reparations in the Tulsa race riots. Recently, Marlon's hobby heretofore of doing political cartoons has resulted in a regular side gig, so when they come to take away his passport, there's gonna be lots of very cute drawings in it. Marlon said he's been wondering lately about how we lean into, not where we are as Unitarian Universalists, but where we need to be ready to face this moment. And he said he just preached a sermon the Sunday after the murder of Charlie Kirk about Charlie Kirk, right? That wasn't what his folks expected to hear, but it was where his mind and heart went. He said, and I'm taking this from my notes, and I didn't have time to send it to him to correct it. He said that he wondered after this happened whether, instead of all the other things he did, he should have baked muffins. Knowing his neighbors were hurting, literally, his neighbors were hurting, he was wondering whether, quote, I should have baked muffins and brought them over. And said, I don't agree with everything you think about this moment, but I know you're suffering and I don't want you to suffer. I care about you. Maybe he said then, when the next thing happens that breaks my heart, they'll come and say the same thing. And maybe after that, we can talk. You can tell me about your suffering and I'll tell you about mine. And maybe that's how we begin. We need bridge builders, he rightly observed. Maybe we need to be the builders of bridges. There feels some days like a Grand Canyon that stretches between so many of us in this country. Real or imagined chasms, I don't know yet how many and what kinds are out there, and there are some real differences and hard places, some scorpions among us and in us too, I'm sure. But we cannot live and make a nation worthy of our ideals if we keep standing on our own side and shaking our fist. That can't be all we do. And I know many of you have been in a place of greater compassion and curiosity and love for a long time. I just want you to know I'm slowly getting there. And those of you who aren't there, I think that's fine. And depending on what your life circumstances are and how you are being treated and what threats you're under in this moment, that is deeply understandable. And please keep loving on yourselves. Love on your own suffering and whatever shakes you awake in the night until you feel seen and heard by yourself, like a parent holding their beloved baby, treat yourself. And if you need someone to stand with you, then come see us. Those of us in the ministry, your community. Because the truth is, my beloveds, we are all suffering. And we need to find a way to compost it in this fall season as much as we can into compassion, find a way through to hope. Joanna Macy, whose memorial service was Friday night at Grace Cathedral, a committed environmentalist and scholar of Buddhism and teacher and friend and mentor to so many, particularly in this area, who taught people how to be in the world and also how they might heal it. She talked of compassion as part of the way. Compassion, Joanna Macy wrote, boils down to not being afraid of the suffering of your world or of yourself. It involves being open to what you're feeling about that suffering, grief and fear and rage and overwhelm, and brave enough to experience it. You can't heal something that you're afraid to get near. Compassion is what impels you to act for the sake of the larger whole. Or to put more accurately, it is the whole acting through you. May the suffering in this world and each of us and all of us be held like a parent holding a beloved child. May it be composted, transformed, however it happens, into a source of wisdom and hope and courage. May that compassion take root in each of our hearts as a desire to eliminate all human suffering wherever we find it. A compassion that shows up maybe as muffins at the doorstep, as an unexpected word shared in an unexpected place, with full humanity and hands extended across the chasms. And may it bring us back together to some place we can all call home. May it be so. Blessed be. I love you all. Amen.
This last Thursday, we ended the days of awe, and our sanctuary was used for celebrations of Yom Kippur. In a service where we are talking about compassion, it feels lovely to weave in that piece of the Jewish High Holy Days. In one sacred text, and according to Midrashic teachings, the following is written. On Rosh Hashanah, when the Holy Blessed One ascends to sit on the throne of judgment, God ascends for judgment. Once the people of Israel take their shofarot and blow them, what does the Holy Blessed One do? God rises from the throne of judgment and sits on the throne of compassion and is filled with the compassion for the people and transforms the quality of justice into the quality of compassion. The invitation is for us to do likewise in our lives.